Please sit.
Mic check. Mic check. Just wanted to be sure it was on. My goodness, have I really done all of that? No wonder I'm exhausted. I want to thank my good friend, Reverend David, for this kind invitation to come and worship with you on this special day. I've actually preached here before. Some of you may have remembered back in 2003 for what I can only say was a covert event, for those who might know what that means. But I have to say there were a lot less people here, so this is wonderful to have you here. Thank you for being present this morning. It is good to be among you, bearing witness to your relationship building with each other across congregations, even as I too am given the opportunity to see old friends and perhaps make new ones. I begin with a poem. La Ruta de Mujeres. The path of women. I walk the path that you took hours or days ago. Stones and slope and thorns threaten each step with danger. I see where you slept under the mesquite tree, home to spiders, snakes, ants, familiar to coyotes, Gila monsters, God knows what. A piece of plastic, grass woven into the branches for shade against the merciless sun, a tuna can, toothbrush, tortilla cloth, used bus ticket, all part of your story, your life lost in this desert. Nearby, a tiny silver spoon engraved, a love letter, your Bible, a pair of panties, a baby bottle, birth control pills, breast cancer medicine, diapers, one chancla, a perfume bottle, a pair of pants with a name and number written in the inseam. Oh, what you leave behind haunts me. I know you, sister, mother, friend, lover, aunt. Someday, we will all be held accountable for your suffering, your loss. Someday, we will celebrate your courage, your story, your making your way to the promised land. Someday, we will name this crossing Exodus and thank God that some of you make it across. I know the woman who wrote this poem, the Reverend Del McCormick, a white woman who grew up in Central Florida, a woman who spent years working in Chiapas on the border of southern Mexico, ministering to her sisters, women who were left to struggle on their own and find ways to feed their family while their husbands ventured to El Norte in search of work denied them in their own country. This was written by a woman who would risk going into the mountains at night where the women were hiding to bring them food, help take care of their children, and share each other's theology in her then broken Spanish, which has since been perfected. No, this was not written from the safety of an American home by someone intellectually guessing what it must feel like to be scared to the bone, however empathetic. This poem was written by a woman who eventually found herself ministering on the front lines of Arizona in this war on immigration. After her denomination sent her back north to minister to her own people. Never mind that this is exactly what she thought she was doing. This poem was written after returning to these un-United States, where she discovered she could not leave this story behind and chose instead to minister on another artificially created border. These words were written by a woman of the border in the middle of the chaos to bear witness to such inhumane and unnecessary pain. I also know these women, that is, this composite description of the women that come across the border of judgment, holding not just their children, but the question of survival before them. How far can I walk to feed my child? The idea of will does not enter the inquiry. It is present. The unknown is how far can she walk before her legs get out from under her, before she is discovered. One woman is attempting to create sanctuary. The other is seeking it. Sanctuary, as it happens, is one of our overarching themes for our ministries this year at First Church Unitarian in Littleton, or FCU. In choosing sanctuary, we are not talking about a commitment to be present every Sunday in the room named as such. That might be too challenging for some. No, we are talking about a much broader view of sanctuary. As we choose our yearly themes, we also take time to define them so as to create transparency, partnership, and cooperation. Here is how my leaders have defined sanctuary. With sanctuary comes a feeling of safety. It can come with music, with laughter, silence, or tears. It can come in a place of beauty. Most importantly, sanctuary is the feeling one gets when in the midst of beloved community. In it, it is safe to share with one another, to comfort, support, and encourage one another. Here, it is safe to create together, to try new things together, and to grow together. Sanctuary provides the opportunity for people to be themselves and, perhaps, even to find themselves for the first time. Everyone deserves the opportunity to share in the sanctuary of beloved community. This last line, everyone deserves the opportunity to share in the sanctuary of beloved community, is how I make sense of this year's Justice General Assembly. Regardless of where you stand on the idea for this GA or even immigrant rights, my larger goal is to have you consider understanding Unitarian Universalism itself as a place of sanctuary. A religion where we act on our principles and purposes in order to create a safe place for anyone who may come to our collective doors. A place where people can be themselves and perhaps even find themselves for the first time. Although we assume that one might find themselves in the safety of a congregation, I sometimes think it is better at General Assembly, where more possibilities exist, where it seems more risks are taken, where congregational border crossings occur more naturally. This General Assembly is being held much closer to our country's border than it has in a long time. And we opted to gather in Phoenix after a long process of deliberation 2 years ago by the delegates when it was held in Minneapolis. At that time, Arizona's anti-immigrant law SB 1070, which is currently being defended in the Supreme Court, had just been passed, essentially giving the local police the same status as immigration officials. In its everyday configuration, police officers now have sanctioned power to stop anyone who looks suspicious and demand proof of status. And finding an absence of proof of legal status, immediately turn them over to Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, or ICE. And they are highly motivated to do so, lest they themselves are sued for failure to act. And what's been the effect of this? Families have been torn apart in a different way. Before, it was between countries. Now it is between states, as parents flee Arizona, leaving their legally born in the U.S. child behind with documented relatives. It has created a rise in a state of emotional terror, as initially 24 states produced copycat laws. Mercifully, it is down to a handful of states that are still battling to push the laws through as our country grows more tired every day with immigration fatigue. That is because we have the luxury to do so. But imagine driving along to work and being pulled over because one fender is a different color from the rest of the car. Or you are an exceptionally dark person driving through a predominantly white neighborhood. Or the music blaring out of your car is too loud. Or in your busy corporate life, you forgot to renew your car's inspection sticker. Or you are simply walking along the road, perhaps a bit disheveled from working in the hot sun, perhaps wearing a hoodie, or any number of scenarios that we, the documented, take for granted. And you find yourself quite suddenly locked up. And let's just be clear, too, that said act of locking you up was not completed in a humane way, even though all you did was to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. These scenarios are SB 1070 in action, a law that has facilitated abuse and racial profiling, thereby criminalizing the very existence of an entire population of people. As a country, we have allowed ourselves to react to the immigration challenge as though all undocumented immigrants are criminals. Yet coming to the United States is not a criminal act. It is a civil violation equivalent to a ticket for loitering. Many in our denomination have been quite appalled by the passage of SB 1070. I'm sure many of you here as well. To the degree that 2 years ago, 29 were arrested, including our president, the Reverend Peter Morales, while protesting the law. Many more than 29 went to Phoenix wearing their bright yellow Standing on the Side of Love t-shirts and stood up for immigration rights. That is, stood up for the right to have a more compassionate conversation about how to embrace the challenge of this perceived problem. Stood up and said, this is more than just an economics issue. This is a moral and theological issue. It is morally wrong to needlessly break up families, and theologically, I don't know of any belief system that condones the kind of human as animal hunting that is happening as you are listening to my words this very moment. Today, as I ponder Channing's work, I am drawn to an essay that states, "The first question to be proposed by a rational being is not what is profitable, but what is right." Channing is lifting up the human being of all things as a person, not as an economic commodity. Here, he is not speaking of religion, in spite of the economics embedded in religion, but rather of slavery, or anti-slavery, as the case may be. In another passage in the essay, we can substitute the word slave for immigrant when he writes, "Let it not be said we can do nothing for the slave. We can do much. We have a power mightier than armies, the power of truth, of principle, of virtue, of right, of religion, of love." One thing that we, as a religious people, are attempting to do is rise together and fulfill the mandate our Minneapolis delegates charged us with. Basically, that if we were going to cross a picket line to hold our General Assembly in Phoenix, we could not do so to conduct business as usual. When SB 1070 passed, one immediate action by the folks on the ground working with immigrants was to start a boycott to keep people and their money out of Arizona. For many delegates, crossing this picket line was a serious issue, and hence the debates into the wee hours of the night. While I could not be present in Minneapolis, I am proud that the FCU delegates were, including a youth. They were involved in the many assemblies as well as the vote to go to Arizona. These white, middle-class folks understood deeply that SB 1070 violated our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of each person. As good UUs, this was unacceptable, and with the help of the larger UU world, they held out hope to do something about it. For them, this is what creating sanctuary is about. In their own definition of sanctuary, what they wrote was, "Everyone deserves the opportunity to share in beloved community." They are focused on the everyone part. For me, as a person of color, these words bring me to my family of color and a belief that many of us hold, a belief whose clarity was articulated to me by my good friend Paula Cole Jones, who said that the beloved community must become the standard by which we measure ourselves, as opposed to the beloved congregant. This thought expresses a need for a paradigm shift. She offers that we UUs need a different place to stand from where we have been standing, even as we stand on the side of love, because as a predominantly white denomination, Unitarian Universalism itself was created by the dominant culture. Unitarian Universalism as a monoculture is steeped in dominant culture values and holds our UU principles at the center of who we say we are or are striving to be. I agree with Paula that what we need is a shift to a more multicultural paradigm where what we hold at the center, even above our seven principles, is the love-laden Kingian idea of beloved community, which I call sanctuary. For a long time, many in our pews have held that our seventh principle, the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, should exchange places with our first principle. Paula's thought of placing the notion of beloved community at the center of what we do is in keeping with this idea that the good of the entire community should supersede the desire of any one individual. The notion of beloved community calls us to stand in a place where through loving kindness we can return to the center of who we say we want to be, a beloved community. It calls us to be not just a better Unitarian Universalist, but a better human being. Thus, by choosing the notion of beloved community as the standard by which we measure ourselves, we can then create an authentic sanctuary for all. And now the question becomes, did we know what we were doing when we voted to go to Phoenix? I pray that we did, as we are about to enter into that phase where it is all about to happen. This has not been an easy undertaking, yet it has been an exciting one. I know because I served on the GA Program Development Group, or PDG. We were the ones tasked with selecting which workshops would constitute the program, and it was a hot seat that I welcomed sitting in. As a Justice Center General Assembly, the PDG has focused not just on immigrant rights, but racial and economic justice as well, for they are all intertwined. Perhaps one or five of you are asking yourselves, what would make this GA different when in general we are a justice-focused denomination? The painful reality is that we do not always walk our talk. Often we barely crawl. Our hearts are in the right place, but our convictions do not always lead to action, and without action, nothing in this world can change. The reality is that if you want something different, you have to choose something different. Creating a Justice GA is a small opportunity to expand on the idea of sanctuary for the larger denomination. For those whose hearts are aligned but don't know how to pump them into action, this GA makes a pointed attempt to teach people how. It will teach useful skills that can be brought back to your congregations and communities. In creating sanctuary, faith-based skills will be taught that include how to be accountable to community partners. We want people to show up ready to serve, and we want them to leave feeling that they are equipped to serve even better. We view our time in Phoenix as a gateway to ongoing relationships, partnerships, and action on these important issues. By educating through first-person stories and case studies and sharing successful congregational models, we will work toward creating a new kind of sanctuary. We will worship in a variety of ways while enjoying diverse musical offerings. Our workshops will model crossings and connections and help lead the way in creating partnerships among the GA communities. When the PDG was done selecting, we came away very excited about our choices. There is a strong emphasis on enabling participation by youth and young adults, and have them lead adult workshops as well. In sanctuary, it is safe to try new things and grow together. For the first time, there will be a large number of non-UUs participating who appreciate our ministries and want to make connections with us. And finally, during GA, we can prepare for the National Day of Witness and Service on Saturday, June 23rd. Envisioned as a day of solidarity, Saturday has been set up as a National Day of Witness and Service so that UUs can be out serving the needs of your own communities who cannot attend GA. Can you feel how powerful that will be? Can you imagine all over the country in golden t-shirts or not, living out our faith, knowing that others are doing the same somewhere else in the country. And then, after all is said and done, it remains to be seen what the effect will be on our denomination, as it will be difficult to go to next year's GA in Louisville, Kentucky, and return to business as usual. Although our GA originated as a time to come together and conduct the business of the Association of Congregations, of which we are all a part, well, the times, they are changing. And perhaps we've outgrown that model. Perhaps in wanting to create a Unitarian Universalism that is a sanctuary, we have to move beyond our comfort zones. We have done it in the past when we stood up for the peace movement, for women's rights, for GLBT rights, for racial equality, and now in our bright yellow t-shirts, we are standing up again, this time for the rights of our global neighbors. People who have provided our creature comforts by undertaking soul-renting journeys in order to do back-breaking work, simply to feed their children. Facing the possibility of a long, slow death, our immigrant family members choose life. I have come to talk about General Assembly because I am hoping, no, praying, that this Justice GA will be the jumping off point into a new UU identity that authentically encompasses us all. That the theoretical experience of the seventh principle become the lived experience for all. If we are to be saved by our character, as Channing so eloquently asserted so many years ago, then our work as religious liberals is to humanize, not demonize. I am here to speak for my family that struggles on the border, my family of the margins. When you spend all your time living in the center, and some think the center of the universe, it is easy to forget what lies in the periphery, as my colleague Leslie Takahashi Morris has written in Voices from the Margins. In this excerpt from her poem, Marginal Wisdom, she writes, "Let us see the fractions, the spectrum, the margins. Let us open our hearts to the complexity of our worlds. Let us make our lives sanctuaries to nurture our many identities. The day is coming when all will know that the rainbow world is more gorgeous than monochrome, that a river of identities can ebb and flow over the static, stubborn rocks in its course, that the margins hold the center." The margins hold the center. And one way to recognize that fact is to take stock each morning of where all your creature comforts come from and how they arrived. For every day that this country has existed, we owe a great deal to the people of the margins, who for all intents and purposes have been invisible, even when they stood before us. In an effort to expand our vision, the Reverend Dr. Jackie Lewis calls us, therefore, to become border people. She argues that we need to develop a border consciousness that will allow each of us to be self-consciously other-oriented. That we need to stretch ourselves, develop new languages beyond just Spanish, such as the language of the older man, the teenager, the mother left alone. That we need to go deeper Go naked, come clean, know your own stuff too. She calls us to develop a border theoethic of radical welcome and acceptance, one that is prophetic and requires the practice of conversational engagement across borders. As my friend Dell knew so well back in Chiapas, a border theoethic requires the courage to speak the truth and to know when to be quiet and listen, the courage to deal with conflict, the willingness to be wrong, the ability to know where the border is since it shifts contextually, to be self-aware of the self and the other, which is to be emotionally intelligent, and finally to have the bold, visionary, prophetic, spiritual willingness to act when action is not popular. Oh, what you leave behind haunts me. Someday, we will all be held accountable for your suffering, your loss. If you are willing to become a border person in all its facets, then you also must be willing to step over the edge. Every sanctuary movement that has ever existed required stepping over the edge, required taking action to cross borders. If you have not heard the call yet, at this time, manifesting in a place called Phoenix, hear it now. Our faith is calling us as Unitarian Universalists to be who we say we are. As Channing would say, to let our lives preach more loudly than our lips. And to be present, physically or virtually, for this justice-centered, paradigm-shifting, identity-defying event that we wholly intend to start with love. For without love, no authentic sanctuary can ever be created. Perhaps it is not too late. Perhaps we will be just in time. Yes, yes, and so it is. Blessed be.